Microphone is on. Hello, hello. Yeah. The green light is on. Don't hear us?
A sound button.
There's a little microphone on.
Is there a microphone on this thing?
But that microphone's all right.
Okay.
Welcome to the 21st century.
What's the number, Rabbi?
What's that?
Can't hear you.
I'll call him on this thing. Okay? Hello?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Hello, how are you?
We're great. We're hearing you from all sides, so maybe you should put mute on everything.
You got it, bye.
Okay. Nothing personal, guys. Just hard to hear the echo of you, me, and everybody else. Okay.
Here we. Video, though.
You just lost video.
I just turned him off. I thought he was on the phone.
Okay, he's on the phone, but I guess he wants to see him here. Okay, so he's gonna get you back on video. Here we are, a bunch of Neanderthals trying to work in the 21st century. Okay. Here we go. So today, last week, I think was our third time that we were learning here about the Malchus, if I'm not mistaken. Some were here, some were not here. And we, in this essay of the Maral in the Ner Mitzvah about the Arba Malchus, about the four kingdoms, so the steps that we went in were that the first was to describe the phenomenon called the four Malchus, and why there is such a thing, and what they represent, that they represent some kind of limitation and curtailment on Malchus Yisrael, on the kingdom of Klal Yisrael, on the Malchus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, on the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it would be visible in a more complete world. And he explained the idea of it being the four kingdoms, because of the four being the physical dimensions of the world that would be without and would limit the higher dimension, the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We went on to speak about what those Malchios were, and the Maral had this very beautiful and intricate way of lining everything up using a few different axes. And Emir Tashem, I'm going to try to give you like a chart that maps the Mahalach, the approach of the Maharal. Started working on it. But he tried to explain the four Malchios, the four kingdoms, based on three outlines, based on three structures. One structure was the dream of Daniel, where the Malchios represented four different animals, with Bavel representing the lion, and the lion that's significant and important, and king of the beasts, which Bavel is significant and important, the first kingdom, the one to start the whole process of the Golios for the Jewish people, right, the lion. And then there's Poras, Persia, that's represented by the bear, that's not significant specifically, but's always hungry and looking to devour more and more and more. And that was Ahasuerus, with his pledge of many new taxes, that we found that the common refrain in Megillas Esther was that he put mas al ha'aretz, he taxed the land, he was always trying to take and to take more, even when he was destroying the Jewish people. Haman bought the right by giving Ahasuerus all kinds of money, 10,000 kikar kesef, to do so, implying his hunger. That's the second kingdom. The third kingdom was Yavon, was the Greeks, which is compared to the leopard, and that was symbolized by the strength of the leopard, the azos, the brazenness, the audacity, the idea that it's not passive of the leopard, which we said is representative, Maral explained, is representative of the wisdom of Greece. And the fourth is the monster, that has somehow all these different animalistic properties, which is the fourth kingdom that has it all, has all of them together. And it also parallels Nebuchadnezzar's dream, where he saw it as a person, because he didn't see the, right, and Daniel saw that they were missing the divine image that was there that would be characteristic of Malchus Yisrael, of the Jewish kingdom. So he saw he saw the others as missing that. He saw them in the image of animals, whereas Nebuchadnezzar didn't see things that way for obvious reasons. He was one of them, and therefore he saw it as a person. And the division was between four metals, where the gold is on top. That's the significant. That's Bavel significant. Silver is the amassing of money, which is Persia, and then copper is always associated in Psukim with brazenness, and that's the Greeks. And then the last, the bottom, is the Barzel, is the iron that is destructive, that is the tool of swords and metal implements that's destructive, that's representative of the fourth kingdom. And finally, the third structure. So one structure was Daniel's dream, one structure was Nebuchadnezzar's dream, and the third structure was looking at a person as a whole and seeing the various kochos within a person. Whereas on the one hand you have Bavel, which is the heart, which is the power that moves and motivates the person, what he calls the koach hanefesh, and the then you have Persia, that's the koach haguf, the physical power, which is desire, hunger, very, very physical and basic, right, what we identify with the kaved, with the liver. And then you have Yavan, which is the mind, the mayach, the intellectual, chachma, that's the third. And Edom is the package of the whole thing together, the human being as a whole. But again, Psalms minus the Tzelem Elokim, minus the divine component, the divine peace. And there were many, many different little things that we talked about with that, and that was our main focus in the second installment. And last week, in the third installment, we focused on the Malchus Revius, on the fourth kingdom, which is the last kingdom. And the Maral taught us this idea about it being the destruction, the kingdom of destruction, right? Whereas we know it's compared to the snake that just destroys for the sake of destruction, and it's the most destructive of all kingdoms. And he says, because it's the last one, it's the last hurrah. And the nature is, that was the profound insight shared by the Maral, that because they themselves are headed towards Heeder, they're not going to pass off their kingdom to anybody else. They're going to be headed towards their own self-destruction, so therefore they are also the most destructive. And that's a pattern which we see in life, that someone who does not see for themselves a future tends to be most destructive of everything else around them. That's basically what we talked about. And while there are many nekudos, number one, that we touched upon in the Maral that we did not review here today, and there are also many nekudos in the Maral that the Maral spoke about that we did not highlight or did not touch, but that's the main part of the essay, of the first essay, again the Arba Malchios essay, minus one small part, which is what we're going to focus on this morning. And that is the non-Malchus, the missing Malchus, the missing kingdom. A question which was posed by one of our members here, one of our Shir members here, a couple of weeks ago, and which is a serious question which has to be dealt with without question, which is, what happened to Yishmael? What happened to Yishmael and to Islam? What's their role? Where do they fit in to this scheme of things? Their greatest emergence, of course, is during this period post the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, something which we call Malchus Edom, the kingdom of Edom. And one could easily, quote unquote, sort of like blow it off by saying, well, Malchus Edom, as we've seen, includes all the nations. That's why it's the monster. That's why it's the Adam as a whole, the person as a whole, including all kochos. That's why it's represented in Sefer Bereishis by Sidol Melech Goyim, Sidol, the king of nations, because they get the whole world involved. So maybe in that sense, Yishmael is involved as part of them. To add a little nisbach, to add a little additional note to it, not a little additional note, but it's a meaningful additional note, we could get more insight from yesterday's Parsha. Because in yesterday's Parsha, what did we learn? At the very end of yesterday's Parsha, which was Parshas Toldos, Yishmael, Esav sees that Roy Spinois Kanan Veine Yitzchak Aviv, that the daughters of Kanan are bad in the eyes of Yitzchak. He's not happy with them. Vayelach Esav el Yishmael. So Esav went to Yishmael. Vayikach es machlas bas Yishmael ben Avram achais nuveis anashav leilisha. He went to Yishmael and he took the daughter of Yishmael for a wife. Says Rashi, you know, he was sort of this fellow. He, you know, nishtahin, nishtaher. He was good enough. He was smart enough to know that he wasn't particularly happy with his wives. So he went and he took one which maybe was a little closer to home, was a little bit better, was not the nice Canaan, and he thought that would satisfy his parents. Of course, as Rashi says, as the pasuk says, al noshav lo isha. He wanted to get something that his parents would like, but he wasn't ready to separate from the ones that his parents didn't like, right? It's not like he divorced these and replaced them with this one. He added this. And there's what to talk about with this, which is not for our discussion here today, but what you end up having here is that who is Yishmael's son-in-law is Edom, is Esav. So Esav himself, to some degree, brings Yishmael into his picture. And we say this in the davening, in the slichas of Yom Neiroim, we say, Kalei Seir v'chaisnai v'yalu l'tziyayin meishiyim. We ask the Rabbanu Shem that he should get rid of Seir, of Edom, v'chaisnai, and his father-in-law. Right? We acknowledge Yishmael as a figure, but we don't mention him by an independent name anymore. We see him as being an adjunct to Esav. And Esav made that association, right? It was sort of, they had a support group for disenfranchised Abrahamic children, right? You know, Kalei Seir v'chaisnai. This is what it was. He brought them in to his Malchus. And so, besides for the global that you have, that on the one hand you have whatchamacallit, on the one hand you have that Esav brings all the nations, Melech Goyim, but you have even more a very specific relationship between Esav and Yishmael, and therefore we could see Yishmael as part of the Malchus of Esav. That's, so to speak, the, in a one way, the easy way to address this. But let's go a little bit more, a little bit further. We're going to look first at the words of the Maharal, and then we'll see a little bit of background. Rabbi Hartman, as usual, is of course helpful in identifying some of the sources involved in this background. But there's something very significant here, and I'm not going to tell you that it's an extremely settling, significant thing that the Maharal teaches here, as we will see. It's a small piece, relatively speaking. It's found on page Samach Aleph in the Hartman edition of the Ner Mitzvah. V'yesh bnei adam shaylim. There are people who ask, V'hechan ramaz malchus Yishmael, shi malchus rabbasa v'takifa. Where does he allude Daniel in these dreams, or in Nebuchadnezzar's dreams, brought in the book of Daniel? Where is it alluded to the kingdom of Yishmael, which is a great and strong Malchus? And the answer to this, Mashal Izachar Malchus Yishmael, and the answer to this, that that he doesn't mention a Malchus Yishmael, is because Ki lo yichshev hakosav rak hamalchus shekiblu malchus kadishin el yoinim shiyorshu malchus Yisrael v'koicham ve'im elu dalim malchiyos. Writes the Maharal concisely that it only registers on the list of Malchios of kingdoms those who received Malchus Kadishin El Yoinim, which is a language borrowed from Daniel, the holy, highest Malchus that they got from the Jewish people. If Yisrael surrendered their Malchus to them, so then they're counted amongst the four kingdoms that exile the Jewish people. V'imroi Shebatel Malchus Yisrael lehigia lehem Malchus, and they wouldn't get it without the Jews losing it to them. Avul Malchus Yishmael lehem yorash koichem in Malchus Yisrael, but Yishmael didn't get its strength from the kingdom of the Jewish people. Yishmael had its own strength that it did not usurp from anybody. Yishmael has a koyach which it inherited in its own right as a descendant of Avram. Hashem Yisbarach Omar Uli Yishmael Shematicha. Remember when Avram Avinu was told that he was going to have a child with Sarah? So he said, I wish Yishmael would just be faithful before you. So he says, yeah, regarding Yishmael, I've heard you, right? He's going to be great, and so on and so forth. So Yishmael got koyach bifnei atzmo, on his own. And therefore, it does not get mentioned here as the Arba Malchios. The Arba Malchios took from the Jewish people and will end up giving it back to the Jewish people. That's what the Maral says. That's his Iker Mahalach. That's his main Mahalach. He offers a second interpretation that's included in Malchus Poras, that Yishmael is like the Malchus of Persia, and that even though, of course, the Persians and the Yishmaelim are two different things, however, but their interests and their directions and their midos are the same, and therefore it's not counted as a separate kingdom. That, by the way, is something also which is very significant and interesting nowadays when you consider about the relationship between the Arab world and the Iranians, right? And from a pure sense, they don't consider themselves to be the same, right? The Persians and the Yishmaelim do not consider themselves the same, but there's a lot that we see in them that they are in significant ways connected to one another, language, religion, habits about the kinds of belts they like to wear, all kinds of things. So we'll leave that though for today. We'll leave that. I'm not planning to address it here. But the let's talk about the first thing which the Maral says, which is it doesn't get counted amongst Arba Malchus. So first let's look. I want to read to you a little piece from the Ramban. The Ramban in Parshas Bullock, at the end of the words of Bilam, where Bilam starts prophesizing regarding all the nations, Vayar Sakeni, and so on and so forth. So it's a fascinating piece in the Ramban. Not all of it is found in all editions of the Ramban. But the Ramban writes as follows. Rabbi Avram nishtabesh bozeh. Rabbi Avram became confused. V'hichnis bozeh malchus Yishmael. He included amongst the malchios, right? The Ramban over here is speaking about the fact how different, right? He's speaking about the Arba Goliyos, the Chaya Haravias, and so on and so forth. And he says the Ibn Ezra included amongst the Arba Goliyos, specifically as the fourth, the monster, malchus Yishmael. He included in this the kingdom of Yishmael, ki nafal pachdom alav, and the reason is because he faced them, and he was petrified of them. V'toan eich leitimna malchus gedoylu v'atzuma kamaya. How could a malchus which is as significant as that not be included? V'zeis hatana michisoran das, says the Ramban. This explanation or this argument is an argument which is built on ignorance. Ki arba malchus shera Daniel kulan aimdes bezu acharzu. Kolachas geveres ava kodemes v'tefeses hamalchus mimena. The Ramban says it a little different language than the Maral. He says each one of the four kingdoms that are listed in Daniel are sequential. One takes the malchus from the one that preceded it. It's a passing of the baton. V'chol am achas mamsheches b'Yisrael shibud v'golus b'imei malchusa, and each one uses their kingdom, their reign, to continue the kingdom, the exile, the shibud rather, and the exile, the subordination, and the exile of the Jewish people. V'lokach hera Daniel b'chaloymei. That's why Daniel was shown in his dream. Kishtabdu banu hakazdim. First it will be the Babylonians, and then the Persians, and they will take their place, and then the Greeks will take their place, and then the Romans will take their place, ad eis keitz, until Mashiach. Ki lo tipasek malchusam rak biyad hagoyel. Their kingdom will only end at the time of the goyel. So the thing is that if Romi ended and Yishmael took over, So then, says the Ramban, yes, there would be another Malchus called Yishmael. But because whatever Yishmael does and whatever tortures and pain they inflict upon the Jewish people is not happening after what we call Golus Raimi, but during Golus Raimi, it's a sidebar to Golus Raimi, so therefore it does not get counted separately. And he says, he says, there were always simultaneously other kingdoms that were very powerful, simultaneous to Greece and simultaneous to Persia as well. But the Torah doesn't, and Daniel in his dreams doesn't enumerate, you know, every single Malchus that exists. It does the primary Malchios that were the leading ones in subordinating the Jewish people. And therefore, that's going to be the same thing. And Begolus Raimi Anachnu Ad Shetoyva Zichra V'Nigal Mimena. He says, we're in Golus Raimi until it is gone. Umi Yaidea, and who knows? V'ulai Te'aved Oid Malchus Yishmael Kaidem HaMashiach. And who knows, maybe Yishmael will disappear from the scene as a force before Mashiach comes. Aval achaya haravi is hi asher higlisanu, v'timshach banu galusa ad hamashiach. But the achaya haravi is Edom, we know that golus will continue until Mashiach. Okay, so since the golus, the malchus of Raimi continues uninterrupted, sidebars, additional kingdoms that play a role, don't count as separate malchios. That's the basic principle which the Ramban establishes here. And it sounds in certain ways like the same principle that the Maral is saying, except he expresses it a little bit differently. He says the Malchus are those who took Malchus from Yisrael. Right? The Ramban seems to be saying they took Malchus from one another. One took from Yisrael and then they passed it on to one another. His emphasis is on taking Malchus from one another, whereas the Maral's emphasis is on the fact that they took the Malchus from Yisrael. And, you know, the Ramban is explaining sequentially. Obviously, associatively, you can say it's the same thing. And the Maral certainly, even though he was clearly familiar with the Ramban, but he would not express it in the way of the Ramban, because remember that the Maral's whole thesis about the Arba Malchios is that this is the un-Malchus Yisrael. That's what the idea is. It's the blocking of the light of the kingdom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and of the kingdom of Yisrael. So therefore he says it's those who got it from Yisrael, those who took away the light from Yisrael. The Ramban and the Maral are similar, but the Ramban and the Maral are not the same. And this is what we say here, something unsettling. The Ramban says Malchus Yishmael is a sidebar. Maybe it'll end when Malchus Raimi ends, and maybe it'll end earlier. We just know that Malchus Raimi is going to go till Mashiach, and therefore there's no Malchus after Raimi to speak of. There might be simultaneous Malchios, simultaneous kingdoms, but they don't register. But Malchus Raimi is going to take us to the finish line till Mashiach. I would like to ask you a question. How about the following suggestion? Okay? Shudder at the thought. How about the following suggestion, which is that Malchus Yishmael may not end with Moshiach, but instead of what the Ramban suggests, that it could end earlier, is that it may not end then either. Now, where would you get such a crazy idea from? From the Maral. Because the Maral says that Yishmael doesn't draw its strength from Yisrael, which is a whole different, now you see a very significant difference between what he's saying. Yishmael doesn't draw his strength from Yisrael. Avram Avinu gave Yishmael his own independent strength. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, gave Yishmael its own independent strength. He says, Yitzchak is going to be your child, and so on and so forth, Gesundheit. But Yishmael will also have strength. So, if Yisrael has strength, and every other kingdom that we speak about here above these four kingdoms, the strength they have is because they usurped the strength of Yisrael. So you understand. that when Malchus of Moshiach comes and Kol Yisrael is reinstated in their proper position, there go the other Malchios, because since the Jewish people reclaimed their kingdom, the others will have nothing left. But if Malchus Yishmael does not have that, because they draw their strength not from Yisrael, but they draw their strength independently as heirs of Avram, so then maybe even when Yisrael's at full strength, Yishmael does not have to be eliminated. Now, what I'm suggesting to you works. It could be, except it doesn't fit, of course, with our picture of Moshiach, which would be, where Kol Yisrael would be on the top of the pile and would be acknowledged. But it does imply to some degree that the level of destruction of Yishmael wouldn't have to be the same way.
Yishmael did tshuva.
Ah, excellent. Yishmael did tshuva. Even in the antecedent of all of this, even in where this all came from, in Yishmael and Yitzchak, we find that when Avram Avinu died, so it says, "Vayikru Eisa Yitzchak v'Yishmael banav." Yitzchak and Yishmael, the sons, buried him. When Yitzchak died, it said, "Esav and Yaakov buried him." Esav went first, because Esav didn't do tshuva. But Yishmael let Yitzchak go ahead of him, even though Yishmael was older, because he did tshuva and he recognized Yitzchak's precedence. So there's something there that Yishmael is able to do tshuva, to coexist, to recognize the greatness of Yisrael and not to fight it. And maybe that's why it can continue to exist, in a certain sense, as a subordinate, even at the time of the Mashiach. However, Esav never accepts it. And therefore, Esav either is going to exist as a Malchus, or is going to have to be destroyed. It's going to have to be lost. And that's a very important, significant, and subtle difference. So I want to just try to be masbir, try to explain something here. Want to try to explain it in a couple of stages, using actually two separate mamorim, two separate statements, essays, to some degree, of Rav Hutner Zichrono Livracha, who discussed this line of the Maral, this few words of the Maral, which, by the way, we also had similar passage in Netzach Yisrael, which where he discussed this, one discussion generally, and one discussion, a very personal discussion, because, as you may know, Rav Hutner was on one of the airplanes which was hijacked in Black September. And he sat on a runway in Jordan, or wherever it was, for a while, and was released. He came back. He came home on Erev Rosh Hashanah, and Rav Hutner had some comments. It's brought his daughter. It wrote in the biography which he wrote about him, which is published in the Sefer Zikaron of Lepachad Yitzchak. She wrote a little bit about comments which he made on the plane, which he then expanded upon slightly when he spoke publicly. Yeah.
There was something, I guess, that brought up more by the Ramban and the difference in the Maral, but I'm not sure that we addressed this issue. But the difference between Bavel and Paras and Mada is historically. We addressed the fact that it didn't seem historically that Paras and Mada did take it from Israel. It seemed that they more took it directly from Bavel.
No. It's not. He does not address it. There clearly Bavel was succeeded by Paras u'Madai, but it has its own story. Paras u'Madai have their own story, very much relative to Yisrael, the story of Purim. But yes, they did not. We did not call Yisrael. Did not come back there to Yisrael and then get exiled again by Paras u'Madai. And he does not. I don't know where that he addresses. Okay. So let's try. So two things. Yesterday we read Parshas Toldos, and Parshas Toldos starts with Rivka Imenu having grumblings in her belly as she is pregnant, and the grumblings are interpreted for her. She goes to seek out counsel from Shem, from the Word of God, And the grumbles are interpreted to her as follows. Shnei goyim bebitnech, u'shnei lumim mime'ayach yiparegu. There are two nations in your stomach. There are two kingdoms that separate from your insides. U'la'ayim mila'ayim yamatz. And one kingdom will gain its strength from the other. That's in a certain way the way Chazal interpret that verse. It sounds like they'll be struggling with each other, but the Chazal interpret it more specifically as they will literally get their strength from one another. Meaning, kishazeh kam ze noifel. One rises when the other falls. There's no such thing as mutual success. That my success is your success. Instead, it's a built-in poisonous relationship between brothers. Your success is my failure as a malchus, as a kingdom. Your success is my failure, and I put in this caveat very significantly, as a kingdom. If you will rise as a kingdom, I will not be able to exist as a kingdom. That's the relationship of Yaakov and Esav. That's why their relationship is loaded with tension. That's why one is always going to have to be bowing down to the other. And you don't find it in 2 weeks Parsha, in Parshas Vayishlach. You find a hint to this idea, a strong hint to this idea in the Chumash itself. The Pasuk says at the end of Parshas Vayishlach, it speaks of the Dairis, the generations of Edom. And it says, Ve'eila amlochim asher molchu be'eretz Edom, lifnei melach melech livnei Yisrael. These are the kings who ruled in Edom before there was a Jewish king. So what's the idea? U'kenegdan hemid Yaakov, u'batol malchus Esav b'yameim, etc. So Rashi points out the historical reality, and you find this in the Chazal, Mufarshim, what the Pasuk is saying. They had kings before the Jewish people had kings. And when the Jewish people had kings, Batal Malchus Esav B'Yameim, then the Romans didn't have kings. It was going to be one or the other. The Gemara expressed this, Lo Nismala Tzur Ela Mechurbana Shel Yerushalayim. Right? This city of Rome was only built from the ruins of Yerushalayim. Whereas all kinds of agadaic ways that this is expressed. But they're mutually exclusive. Both cannot be king. Kishazek kam zenayfel. And therefore, Malchus Haravius, which is Malchus Edom, means the destruction of Jewish Malchus. Means the destruction of the Jewish kingdom. And the rise of the Jewish kingdom means the destruction of Edom. There's no such thing with Yishmael. Yishmael and Yitzchak were not buddies. But there was never this relationship of kishazek kam zenayfel, that when this one rises, this one has to fall. That was never defined in their relationship. The opposite is the case. Almost the opposite is the case. When Avraham Avinu is told about the impending birth of Yitzchak, Hashem says to him, in response to Avraham Avinu's question, how about Yishmael? He says, don't worry, Yishmael will also be great. There is a simultaneous existence, in a great sense, between the two of them. And it's deliciously ironic. Why? Because one might have thought that the opposite should be the case. Yishmael was told straight out by Avraham Avinu what he felt about him. He sent him away. He sent him out of the house. The Gemara describes it, maybe we'll recall the Gemara shortly, as a divorce of his child. Goresh asa ama azayis v'espina, send away this ama, right? Sarah said that. Goresh, what's the term? Goresh gerushin, right? That's divorce. Get rid of this maidservant and her child, because he's not going to inherit with my son. And Avraham Avinu was told to listen to what Sarah says. And that's what he did. He sent away Yishmael. Yishmael doesn't have an inheritance in the Eretz, in the ten nations' lands that were promised to Avraham Avinu, because he was disinherited. The Gemara that I was referring to a moment ago is that when Yishmael, when Alexander the Great had his world court, and the Yishmaelim came to sue the Jewish people for a portion in Eretz Yisrael, to share Eretz Yisrael, so he said, so the Jew who argued for the case for the Jewish people, Gavia ben Pesisa, said, well, look in the Torah. It says that Avram Avinu gave parting gifts to everybody else, and he kept his main estate. He gave it to Yitzchak. So therefore, that person who disinherits his child, the child can't claim a Yerusha, can't claim a portion later. That's the nature of it. Interestingly, even Yishmael didn't say in their claim against the court, like the Canaanites said, or the Mitzrim said, you know, to somehow take over the Jewish people. They just wanted to share. They wanted to be able to be together at the same time. We're also a child of Avram. But what's the answer? They were rejected. They were sent away. Maybe that, even without saying that Yishmael did tshuva, one could explain that that's why when it came to burying Avram, Yishmael let Yitzchak go first. Avram had been pretty clear about the pecking order in his family. Was Yitzchak similarly clear with Esav? Absolutely not. Yitzchak intended to bench Esav, and even when it failed, right, he gave Esav some kind of a bracha. Some degree was limited, imprisoned by the brachos which had escaped his lips and been given to Yaakov to say that he's going to be the master over his brother, but he never definitively threw Esav out. Esav left, as we're going to learn in Parshas Vayishlach, because there wasn't room for both of them to be there, so he went because Yaakov was coming and there wouldn't be room for both of them. So Yishmael, who was definitively told by Avram, go away, Yishmael, we say, can coexist with Avram, with Yitzchak. Esav, who was never definitively told to go away, can't coexist. Now, isn't that ironic? But to some degree, it's not ironic. It makes perfect sense. If Yishmael's given a clear place away from Yitzchak, so we say, Yishmael, go gesunter heit. You go over there. You're not part of this. Don't imagine you're part of this. Develop for yourself your own place, your own identity, your own strength, which you can have. Uli Yishmael Shematicha, I've given it to you. Take it. Gesunter heit. But it's not affecting the Bnei Yisrael. Right? It's going to be on its own. So Yishmael can understand and can go off and do his thing. However, Esav was never given that. He was never told he'd have his own place. His fate was linked to the Bnei Yisrael, and he was told, V'hoya kasher torid uforakto uloi me'al tzavorecha, which is, when Yisrael fails, that's going to be your day. But when Yisrael is strong, you won't. He wasn't given his own place. He wasn't sent off to do his own thing. And therefore, because he was kept close, he's more of a threat. It's a very significant difference. So Rav Huttner, he interpreted this piece of the Maral, and he said that what the Maral is saying here is that with Esav there's a relationship which is defined of Kishezek Kom Ze Neifel. When this one rises, this one falls. And those are the Malchios that we speak about here. The Malchios which by virtue of their strength is the Jewish people's weakness. The Malchios are really not a description of the strength of the nations, it's a description of the weakness of the Jewish people. And therefore, if the strength draws from the strength of the Jewish people, takes away the strength of the Jewish people, that's the Malchus. Yishmael does not draw from that strength. Yishmael has his own independent strength. And therefore, it's not going to be counted amongst the Goliaths. That's an insight which Rav Huttner says, in actually it's a mimer in the Pachad Yitzchok on Chanukah, mimer Tesvov, where the 15th essay in Chanukah, where he discusses this idea in the Maral. That's one notion from Rav Huttner. And I'll conclude with the second notion from Rav Huttner.
Was he Machadish that mimer while he was on this point?
I don't entrance of it. It's a Chanukah Maimer. It's not. I don't know which year it was in. It's, I don't know. But the what I'm about to tell you, he did. He did come from the from experience.
So the Gemara calls considers any sub use from Mumer, right? And I saw brought in Rabbi Yosef that he's a Chazir, is Chozer because it will be kosher. There's some kedusha that we find in Esau. We find uncles comes from Esau. We find Rabbi Akiva, family comes from Esau. We find that there's kedusha kitayin b'fiv. I mean, there's something hidden deep inside Esau that we need, and we don't see. I don't know historically. I don't know Yishmael in terms of gerim. Like, do we see any greatness coming from Yishmael? But we do see that Esau has this Yisrael moment aspect. So again, Yaakov seems to be taking over the Esau battle, the tafkid of Esau in life. When he takes over the Bechorah, but it seems like there's still something that has that we need Esau for. And
yes.
We see the other
for the same reason that it's closer and it was never sent away and it was never chased away, there does seem to be something that we try to salvage from Esau.
Right.
And yes, there is that difference that is significant of Yisrael Mumer, that term which is used by Esau of Yisrael Mumer. The Rav Huttner also spoke about another thing, and that was that the Torah never speaks about such a thing called Malchus Yishmael. There's no such thing as a kingdom of Yishmael. By Yishmael, the pasuk says, "Shneim asar nesiim yolid." He will give birth to 12 princes. Unesativ l'gai gadal nesiim, princes, perhaps. Kings, not. A kingdom, by definition, requires a certain level of deference and structure that is anathema to Yishmael. Just think about it. How was Yishmael conceived? Yishmael was conceived by Hagar, who struggled in that entire story of conception to defer to her master, to her mistress, Sarah. She was beneath Sarah, and the whole story of the struggle there is that she didn't accept to be beneath Sarah, and so she ran away. Right? When Hagar was sort of flexing her muscles of independence as if she was her own person, so Avram gave her to Sarah. He said, "Do with her what you want," and Sarah afflicted her. Why? Sarah was just trying to, was upset her, she was jealous, she was just trying to get her licks in. No. Hagar entered this as a maidservant. Avram Avinu was not interested in getting married to somebody else. She was there as a surrogate mother. A surrogate mother is not a second wife. A surrogate mother is an additional physical outpost of their first wife, of the original wife. But Hagar couldn't take just being subordinate. So she ran away. And that would be the characteristic of Yishmael, who lives in the desert. What does that mean? To exist within the framework of a society where you have to respect the boundaries, and you have to exist this way within doesn't exist for Yishmael. So it doesn't exist, doesn't mean that he can't be just subject to it. It means he can't create that structure altogether. He's not a melech, and he's not subject to a melech. It's a different world. Yeah, they will have their princes. They will have their tribal leaders. Right? That term which we have learned, in the past 10 years, since I've got tribal leaders, and in this area and that area. But that's very different than a melech. That's very, very different than a king. It's very different than a malchus. And when we speak about the Arba Malchios, we speak about four kingdoms. We don't speak about terrorist groups. We don't speak about guerrillas. G-U-E-R. We speak about kingdoms. And I would just conclude by sharing with you a small thing, quote-unquote, in quantity, that the Maharal says in the Gur Aryeh in yesterday's Parsha, in contrasting Esav and Yishmael. in the beginning of the Parsha, when she gets that prophecy about what's going on in her belly, she's told Shnei Goyim Bevitnech, and the spelling in the Torah is Geyim. Right? Goyim, two nations, it's spelled Geyim. Geyim means, you know, great people. Says Rashi, Elu Antoninus v'Rebbe. This refers to Antoninus and Rebbe, Marcus Aurelius and Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, contemporaries, Chavrusus, right? Shalei Pasku me'al shulchanam leitzayin v'leichazeres leibimais hachamah v'leibimais hakshamim. There were radishes and lettuce on their table consistently 12 months a year. In other words, Rebbe was royalty, Antoninus was royalty. It was a time when the Romans were in charge, right? But Rebbe had the most independence and the most malchus that a Jew ever had under the Romans, because Antoninus was the one Roman who, the example of the Roman who, in a sense, as you have to read in the subtlety of the pasuk, Shnei Goyim Bevitnech. That's a description actually of their coexistence, and he was willing to defer and to coexist with Rebbe to a significant degree, and they both had strength at the same time. This is like the, so to speak, the exception to the rule. So the Maral discusses this idea. Why do we pick out Antoninus for Rebbe, you know, to speak about this? And he speaks about this notion that that they coexisted, and he says like this. Umirames al kol Yisrael ve'edaim, and this hints to kol Yisrael and Edaim as a whole. Even though we choose these two specific individuals as examples, but it's a hint to kol Yisrael and Edaim as a whole. Sheyesh lam inyan miyuchad, they have something unique. Shem geim v'raitz alaymar. They have a dignity in their soul. They eat with significance, with style. There's such a thing as a person who eats his food like an animal, without dignity. But the Jews and the Romans, the Esav, don't do it this way. They prepare things nicely in a way which dignifies the person. And so we find in Maseches Avodah Zarah that Edom said, we made many shavakim, we made many marketplaces, merchatzos, bathhouses, and all to take care of ourselves. I mean, they claimed they were doing it for the Jewish people, but we said, no, you did it, so you should be well groomed and taken care of. And says the Maral, the Edomim do it to this day. They dress more dignified and nicely than other nations. And they have beautiful buildings. Not like Yishmael, right? Who doesn't appear in this pasuk, but he's contrasting the two major forces. They don't eat with, they're not particular about their food. V'al malbusham, or their clothing, right? V'al merchatzai seim, and on their bathhouses. V'chein hoyu Yisrael nimshachem achar zeh malasam achashivusam ba'atzmam. And he says, and that poses a challenge to the Jewish people. Because since the Romans share this appreciation, so to speak, for the finer things, so we're much more likely to be drawn after it, right? To be wearing their clothes, to be doing their thing, because Shnei Goyim, because they both have this dignity. Okay, you can analyze it, you can talk about its applications. I think it's something which is probably still observed in many ways. However, the point which I'm just trying to bring from this Maral relative to this last attitude which we said about Malchus Yishmael is what he's talking here about something called Malchus. Rebbe wasn't an indulgent person. You know, Rebbe at the end of his life held up his pinky and he said, I did not benefit to enjoy from this world even one small thing. And the Maral uses this idea to explain that there's such a thing as eating for pleasure and there's such a thing as eating for dignity. When Rebbe's table was loaded with beautiful things, it was because that's Shulchan Malachim, that's what kings have to do. It wasn't because I like radishes and therefore I'm going to import them from New Zealand if I have to, right? It's because you have to do what's dignified. And that was the nature of this table. That's the nature of Malchus. Yishmael doesn't have that. Yishmael doesn't have that sensitivity. And to be a Malchus, to overcome the Jewish people, maybe you need to have that. Maybe you need to have that. That's the way he explains. This is a little bit of the insights of the Maharal on Malchus Yishmael, on the non-Malchus. Okay, Mirtz Hashem, next time we will continue with the next part of the Maharal's essay, which is about Chanukah, focusing in, honing in on Malchus Shlishis and the Jewish response to Malchus Shlishis, Yavan. And Mirtz Hashem, that will be the next time. I'm going to please check your email. I have to travel next Sunday, and it's not clear to me yet whether I will be traveling before the shiur or after the shiur. If I can, I would like to travel after the shiur, but it's not clear to me yet if I'm going to be able to. So please check your email. If your email is not on the shiur email list, make sure that it is.
Who's in charge?
Max Masinter is in charge. You could send it to me or to Bruce, and we'll pass it on. Okay.
Rabbis,